You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I don't know who Kristen is or why Kristen's tweet kept landing in my timeline this weekend, but late Friday night, Kristen took to Twitter because she had something to say about sex. Sex was created by God, Kristen tweeted, for marriage between a husband and wife, not for a boyfriend and girlfriend that are dating. Kristen's tweet got noticed, not unsurprisingly, I suppose, seeing as Kristen, at Living4JC, has 41,000 followers. Interestingly, I don't follow anyone Kristen does, and I'm guessing she doesn't follow anyone I do, and yet there she was in my timeline, again and again, because that tweet got noticed and ratioed, as the kids say, more responses than retweets. A lot of people took to Twitter to argue with Kristen, and I apparently follow a lot of those people who wanted to argue with Kristen this weekend. And why wouldn't people want to argue with Kristen? I want to argue with Kristen. I am arguing with Kristen right now, or arguing at Kristen right now, because her argument, because her tweet is so goddamn risible or risable. I can never remember how to say that word. Risible like the wisible, or risible like rise from the deadable. Anyway, Kristen's tweet. Sex was created by God for marriage between a husband and wife, not for a boyfriend and girlfriend that are dating. Okay, sure, whatever. Kristen is free to believe that, and she's not alone. A lot of people believe that, but they're wrong. Sexual reproduction is anywhere from 500 million to a billion or more years old, and we're not the only ones who do it. Birds do it, bees do it, educated fleas, actually all fleas, fleas that haven't made it are only capable of laying unfertile eggs. Fish fuck amphibians, clams, cows, ferns, flowering plants, apple trees, poodles, fungi, bacteria, Donald Trump's children, and other lower forms of life all reproduce sexually. Set aside all the fucking we humans do outside of marriage and all the boys out there fucking the nice boys they're dating. There's just a whole lot of fucking going on out there outside of our species. Homo sapiens, that's us, only appeared or evolved 200 to 300,000 years ago. And even if the first Homo sapiens immediately started having bridal showers and bachelor parties, which to their credit, they did not, but even if they did, even if marriage was invented at the same time we were, which it wasn't, why is everything else that walks, crawls, flies, or releases spores into the wind having sex if sex was invented by God for the exclusive use of husbands and wives? Incidentally, releasing spores into the wind, that's the only way White House policy advisor Stephen Miller can reproduce sexually. It's the reason all women who work at the White House are so careful to stand upwind of Miller at Rose Garden ceremonies. Anyway, here's the reason people like Kristen are so freaked out about sex. It isn't that God invented sex and some of us are misusing his invention. That's not what scares her. What scares her, what scares a lot of people, is the fact that sex, sexual reproduction, sexual selection, natural selection's kid brother, spontaneous mutation, it invented us. Sex created us. And the randomness of it, all that mating and selecting, it's really terrifying to contemplate. A few different mutations here and there over those hundreds of millions of years, maybe one or two fewer asteroid strikes, and we wouldn't exist. The howling void from which we emerged and to which we are destined to return, and judging from the news, the howling void we seem to be in a big hurry to return ourselves to, thinking about all that shit can break your brain. It's breaking my brain right now. So it's more comforting to think that this powerful thing that created us, sexual reproduction, was instead created for us. And that this creative force, this really powerful chaos agent, could be brought under control if only we could control ourselves. I scrolled through Kristen's timeline long enough to glean that sex was a destructive force in her life, sex and violence. And hey, if her belief system helped Kristen get away from shitty people and make choices that made her feel better about herself, I am happy for Kristen. Honestly, whatever gets you through the night, Kristen. But the reason we need to argue with all the Kristens out there is because they don't just want to control themselves. They want to control you and what gets you through the night. And for most of human history, they could, and they did. and they'd very much like to again. All right, before we begin the show, a quick correction. At the top of last week's show, I said Ilhan Omar, the member of Congress from Minnesota's 5th Congressional District and the focus of hateful racist attacks from our hateful racist president, was born in Sudan. Omar was actually born in Somalia. Thank you to everyone who wrote in to correct me. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Twice as much show, more guests, more questions, no ads. I chat with Kara Dunkley, sex researcher at the University of British Columbia, about her recent paper looking at how pain is experienced as pleasure when deployed in a BDSM context. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is sponsored by OMG Yes, a website where you explore the latest science about women's sexual pleasure through fun, honest videos. Get more understanding, more pleasure, and more tools for an even happier relationship. Get a discount on newly released Season 2 at omgyes.com/savage. That's omgyes.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Everlane, luxury basic clothing and accessories made at ethical factories without those retail markups. For free shipping and to support the Lovecast, go to everlane.com/savage. Thanks to Roman for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Roman is a men's health company that offers remote online diagnosis for ED and convenient monthly delivery of medication. For a free online visit and free two-day shipping, go to getroman.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. 33-year-old female living on the West Coast. I've been dating a guy for about 4 months. We're both married, poly, and have kids. He's trans, and I identify as pansexual. I've never been with a trans guy before, and he's never been with a woman, so there's lots of first times for both of us. It's been a really fun relationship, really good sex, great conversation. We connect intellectually. I mean, the sex is amazing. The problem is he wrote a blog post a few days ago about how despite the great sex and the connection, he feels like we're just not clicking and that it feels like it's a burden to hang out with me sometimes. I really don't know what to do with this information. He's never said anything like that to me before, although he has canceled plans, but he always chalks it up to being overwhelmed with life. And I've been really patient about that up until now, especially with us both being married and poly and respecting the other person's time. I'm really scared that if I bring this up to him, that I read the blog post, that he'll just dump me. We've never talked about his blog before, and I'm not sure if he thought I would read it or if he thought I would not read it. I guess my question is, how do I bring this up? Should I wait a couple of days or should I tell him I read the blog post? I don't want our relationship to end, but I also don't want to be with someone who doesn't actually like me.
You know what you know. You read what you read and you can't unknow it or unread it. That dilemma, I know what I know, I can't unknow it, usually comes up in the context of snooping, but you weren't snooping. He wrote a blog post. He put something out there in public for others to read, for strangers to read, and you read it. You found it. You were reading his blog too, his publicly posted, publicly published blog. You were reading it. And so you know what you know. And I think you go to him and say, so the sex is great. I agree with you there. The sex is awesome. But hanging out with me is a burden. We don't click. We're connecting sexually, but we don't click socially or emotionally. How am I supposed to feel about the times when we do hang out now? How am I supposed to feel about the times when you cancel on me? You know, if he cancels when you're about to have sex, and you know the sex is awesome, you don't have to feel bad about it. But if he cancels when he said he wanted to hang out with you or agreed to hang out with you socially, you're going to read into that. He just doesn't want to be with you. Socially, only wants to be with you sexually. Are you willing to be with him just sexually? Can you put that on the table? Do you just want to be a fuck buddy and nothing else? If you're not willing to be a fuck buddy and nothing else, then you need to end this. I don't know why you wouldn't want him to dump you. I don't know why, frankly, if I were in your shoes, I would dump him. I don't know why you wouldn't want to dump him or stop seeing him. Because it's not just the cruelty. of putting that out there, posting that publicly for his friends to read and others to read and strangers to read. And then one of his friends meet you or run into you when you're out with him. And they're like, oh, this is her. This is the woman who's a burden. This is the woman you don't connect with emotionally or socially, but boy, the sex is great. Like, it's cruel for him to put you in that position where you might be assessed or judged in that way. And it is a display of bad judgment on his part. And even if the sex is awesome, do you want to continue to fuck somebody with no boundaries, no respect for your privacy, no respect for your feelings, and with such terrible judgment? Maybe you do. Maybe the sex is that good that you're willing to fuck somebody who doesn't like you, doesn't click with you, feels like being with you when you're not naked and rolling around is a burden. You're willing to fuck somebody. If the sex is good enough that you're willing to fuck him anyway, by all means, fuck him anyway. But if you want an emotional connection too, I don't think you're going to have that with this guy. And even if you did manage to forge an emotional connection with this guy, could you trust him going forward? Not to write some other dumb blog post where he discusses your relationship in a way that could wind up humiliating you publicly, making you feel worse? Can't imagine you're going to stop reading his blog now. So if I were you, I would end this myself. But in all honesty, if the sex were really amazing and I could extract from him a promise for it just to be sexual going forward and that he would not write about me on his dumb blog anymore, I might fuck him every once in a while too.
Hey, Dan. I'm a gay, cisgendered male living in North Carolina. And last weekend, some of my friends and I, we went up to D.C. for Pride weekend. And while I was there, I was in an orgy, which was actually really fun. First time I had ever done it. And there was a BDSM sex slave tied up in one of the bathrooms with a sign on the door that said, warning, BDSM slave, do whatever you want to him, pee on him, beat him, etc. And since it was my first time seeing that, I was a little put off. Just because he had a mask over his face, I couldn't tell like how happy he was, how into it he was. So I avoided that during the orgy. But later on, I got to meet him in person, talk to him, and found out that he really enjoys that and that he wished people had actually engaged with him more at the party. So later on in the weekend, I actually did end up being his master a little bit, you know, beating him, doing some water sports, and I got really into it. So he and I started texting back and forth a little bit once I got back home, and soon I found out that his goal is over the next 2 months to become a 24/7 slave to my friend, who would be his main master. And to me, that seemed a little far, considering that it should be mostly about sex, not your entire life being an object, which is what he wants to be, completely dehumanized. And I also found out that he's pretty conservative and not out to any of his friends. So to me, that seemed like it was coming from a place of some self-hatred, maybe some internalized homophobia. And my question to you is, do I have a slight responsibility to encourage him to seek help? Since I do want to go back and engage with this, should I tell him that I'm kind of uncomfortable with that? Basically, is that a normal thing in the BDSM community?
Is it a normal thing in the BDSM community? Depends on which thing we're talking about here. Is it normal to want to be 24/7 dehumanized object slave? No, that's not normal, but that is a relatively common fantasy. It's not an easy fantasy for anyone to turn into a reality. It's the sort of thing that a lot of people into that kind of kink will talk about, but very few people, even the ones talking about it, even the ones who say that this is what they want, believe that they'll ever get it or sincerely want it. And even if you really wanted 24/7 objectification and dehumanization, you're not going to find someone who can provide that with you. To keep someone 24/7 as a dehumanized object basically means you have to dedicate your entire life to running this person, to overseeing this person, to controlling and objectifying this person. And no one has time for that for more than maybe a weekend at a go. So when he says he wants 24/7 objectification and dehumanization, and he wants it 24/7, 365 days a year. Yeah, people fantasize about that. He's probably stroking himself while you guys are talking or texting about it. But he knows. He must know. But on some level, he knows or must know or will soon discover that this is an unrealistic desire, that this is something, again, that he can maybe make happen for himself for a weekend, but it's not something that he can make happen for himself 365 days a year. Is it normal in the BDSM community for someone to be not out to their friends? Is it normal for someone to be conservative and then have these crazy ass kinks and want to be left in a bathroom with a mask on and a sign on the door that says do anything to the slave in the bathroom? No, those things aren't normal, but again, they're also not unheard of. Hopefully he's on his way out. You can set aside the kink. There are plenty of people into all of this man's kinks who are out to all of their friends and our Bernie Sanders supporters and our liberals and Democrats. So you can set aside the conservatism and you can set aside the kink and just have a conversation with him, gay man to gay man, about how he's living his life and what he wants out of his life. Maybe he just needs to hear from you and enough people, and maybe he hasn't been out for long or hasn't been sexually active for long. He hasn't encountered many out gay men yet. He just needs to hear from more out gay men about the benefits of being out. Everyone in your life. And your friends knowing that you're gay means that your friends know you and that they're actually your friends. And if you have friends who don't know you're gay and you're closeted, well, then they're not really your friends. And these are kind of gay 101 ideas that people wrestle with at 16, 17, 18, 19, when they're coming out of the closet. But if you people wrestle with these ideas that it's better to lose the friends who aren't really your friends and go find the friends who can really be your friends. Some people don't wrestle with these ideas until they've moved to Washington, D.C. and are working for a Republican senator and are finding themselves in bathrooms and masks with signs on doors saying, abuse the slave inside, do whatever you want to with them. Everyone moves at a different pace along their little journey to coming out. He might benefit from speaking to a kink-positive, sex-positive, gay-positive therapist. But you shouldn't pathologize his kinks. He shouldn't speak to a counselor or a therapist who pathologizes his kinks. His kinks are nothing to be ashamed of, nothing that should be pathologized. His conservatism, however, yeah, that's something he should be ashamed of. That you should definitely pathologize. But circling back to your question, you ask, do you have a responsibility to encourage him to seek help? No, you don't. You don't have a responsibility to encourage someone that you met at a party, played with once, and have talked to a little bit via text to seek help. But I do think that we want to leave our sex partners in better shape than we found them. And this guy sounds like a bit of a mess. And a little bit of encouragement from you to think through his issues around who he's out to and who he's not out to and what he wants in his life and doesn't want in his life, and maybe some encouragement from you to speak with a sex-positive, gay-positive, kinks-positive therapist, that might mean you left him in better shape than you found him. Again, I don't think that's your responsibility, but it's good to err on the side of honoring the campsite rule, leaving someone in better shape than you found him. Thanks to Roman for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Roman is a men's health company that offers remote online diagnosis for ED and convenient monthly delivery of medication. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable ignoring it than they are seeing a doctor. I am certainly guilty of that myself. And pretty much the same goes, or it's even worse, when guys have to talk to their doctors about erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Here at the Lovecast, we take ED very seriously. There is no reason to ignore it. And thankfully, Roman has created an easy way to chat with a doctor online if that's how you need to do it. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient and discreet manner. Getting started is simple. Go to GetRoman.com/savage and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free 2-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. And with Roman, it's easy to connect with a doctor. Just go to GetRoman.com/savage to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/savage for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a 23-year-old bisexual questioning cis woman from Chicago, Illinois, and I'm calling with a question about when it's the right time to begin exploring BDSM and kink. So for a bit of context, I just listened to your episode with Mistress Matisse, and it brought up this kind of debate, I guess, I've been having with a friend of mine, where I had confided in this person that I was super interested in, you know, bondage, kink, consensual, non-consensual role plays, and things along this line. And she said to me that I shouldn't begin exploring kink until I've, quote unquote, I mean, as she put it, mastered vanilla sex. So yeah, and what she was referring to is the fact that I've only had 4 sexual partners and each were one night stands. So I've never had an ongoing sexual relationship with someone. I've never explored with someone for a length of time and really sussing out how the other person works. So yeah, she was basically saying to me, oh, you have to, master and be proficient, as awful as that sounds, at vanilla sex before you can even begin exploring these other sexual fantasies that you have. And yeah, it just really threw me off and didn't feel great to have a friend say to me. So I guess my question for you is there such a thing as needing to, I guess, have a certain experience or enough experience with vanilla sex before you can start moving into kink?
So you've only had 4 one-night stands and you've never had a relationship. Going into a kinky relationship, if you're interested in DS role play, consensual, non-consensual role play, if you're interested in bondage, any form of, you know, impact play or, you know, erotic pain infliction, you have to negotiate that stuff. You have to be able to talk about that stuff. And you have to be able to really use your best judgment when assessing whether this person that you're having this conversation with can be trusted. And I think what your friend is clumsily trying to suggest here is that since you've never been in a relationship, since you've never negotiated with anyone around sex and relationship issues, that your skill set might not be highly developed enough to negotiate something as complicated as BDSM. And she may have a point, but there are folks out there, there are plenty of folks out there who are hardwired, super duper kinky in all of their sexual experiences and all of their sexual relationships and all of their sexual experience and all their romantic relationships have revolved around or involved kink, and they're not necessarily doing it wrong. So instead of telling yourself and instead of letting your friend get in your head and tell you that you can't have the kind of sex that you're interested in having until you have the kind of sex you're not interested in having, what you need to tell yourself is the kind of sex that you want to have has some risks built in, some risks that are inherent. You're going to make yourself vulnerable. It's not that people who have vanilla sex also aren't vulnerable in a room with someone else. They are. But built into the things that you want to do is a higher degree of vulnerability, some varsity vulnerability. Before you allow someone to tie you up, before you engage in consensual, non-consensual role play with someone, you really want to get to know them. You don't necessarily have to have a vanilla relationship with them or anyone else first, but you really have to get to know them. You have to have long, extended conversations. You have to trust your gut. You have to, if they're players in the BDSM scene, check their references. Talk to other people that they have played with by finding them on, for straight people, usually FetLife is a good place to find people, and you're able to check their references or get involved in the organized BDSM community. Again, it's not a perfect system. It's not fail-safe. People can be abused by anyone, anywhere, but less likely to be abused in a context where there are people around and they can vouch for this person. You get to interact with them in a low-stakes environment before you allow them to tie you up or engage in consensual, non-consensual role play with them. So contrary to your friend, I don't think you need to master vanilla sex and vanilla relationships before you can progress to kinky sex and kinky relationships. I just think you need to get a handle on what it is you want, and you need to go into your first kinky encounter, kinky relationship, advocating for yourself aggressively, negotiating, not in role. You are not a sub negotiating with a dom. You are an individual negotiating with another individual as equals about some consensual power exchange for a limited amount of time. And you're going to want to talk that shit to death and trust your gut and check in with the kinky friends that you need to make and you can make if you get involved in the organized kink scene before you jump into bed or into bondage with anyone. Would you buy a t-shirt for $50 if you knew it only cost $7 to make? We wouldn't. Nancy wouldn't. I wouldn't. With Everlane, you never overpay for quality clothes. Everlane only makes premium essentials using the finest materials without traditional markups. They want you to know what you're paying for and why, so Everlane tells you their real costs and are radically transparent about every step in their process, from the materials they use to the ethical factories they work with. No matter your style or preference, Everlane's clothes look better, cost less, and last longer. Because Everlane sells directly to you, their prices are 30 to 50% lower than traditional retailers. And their essentials, like their Cotton Crew t-shirt, exactly what you want an essential to be, versatile, simple, stylish, and made from quality materials. They have a beautiful selection of 100% grade A cashmere. I love their premium Japanese denim, and Nancy especially loves their outerwear made from recycled bottles. Check out our personalized collection at everlane.com/savage. Plus, you'll get free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/SAVAGE, everlane.com/SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a straight woman who's been married to my husband for about 4 years. Neither my husband nor I are really into hardcore BDSM at all, but we're both sort of playful and curious to try out different things that sex has to offer. And one of the things that my husband is interested in is tying me up. We sort of experiment a little bit with some very light sort of dom sub type stuff, but nothing really physical yet. It's more kind of role play and stuff like that. I, in theory, am turned on by the idea of being tied up, meaning when I fantasize about, you know, being tied up and having my husband tease me where I can't, you know, physically interfere with what he's doing or whatever, that sounds exciting. But my problem is that I'm kind of claustrophobic. That has manifested itself in various parts of my life. I don't like elevators, things, I don't like small spaces, things like that. But the few times that we've tried to sort of actually try it out, and we've tried it in what I think are kind of baby steps. He's sort of tied like scarves and sheets around my wrists really loosely. And, you know, we're not doing handcuffs or anything like that. I kind of freak out and it like totally takes me out of the moment. Sometimes it kind of depends on the mood I'm in, but sometimes even something like having his full weight pressing down on me so that I can't move, even that freaks me out. And I just sort of need to get him off me immediately or get untied immediately when I can't continue with what we're doing. This is, like I said, kind of something that's happened throughout my life. It's not specific to sex, but it is definitely interfering with this particular thing that we're trying to do. I've tried smoking weed, thinking that that might relax me, and it actually made it worse. So we won't be doing that again. But I'm just wondering if you have any tips or any ideas about how we could try to sort of build up to me being tied up in a way that would be fun and exciting for both of us, that I wouldn't sort of have this claustrophobic reaction to. I like the idea of feeling out of control, but the actual physical manifestation of it really scares me when I'm in that moment.
I have only one suggestion, and it sounds like you've already tried it and it didn't work, and that is symbolic bondage. That's, you know, you appear to be tied up, there are ropes or sheets or scarves loosely around your wrists, and you can get out of them yourself whenever you want to. That can help people who are interested in bondage but have a little freak out when they lose this kind of control. Get there, get more comfortable with the idea of being tied up, more aroused about the prospect of actually being tied up, and build trust with the partner who is doing the tying up. But if you've already done the scarves and loosely knotted sheets route and you still freaked out and you're claustrophobic, and even if he puts his full weight on you, that can be a problem. It may be that bondage isn't something that you two are going to be able to fold into your life, at least with you as the bound one. Another thing that might help is, instead of you being the one who's tied up, tie him up. get some experience with bondage and what's playful and fun and loving and cheerful about it. And it could be playful and fun and loving and cheerful. It doesn't have to be glowering and mean and sadistic and awful and dark with him tied up and not necessarily tied to the bed. Another thing that might help you is instead of tying you to something, which may trigger your claustrophobia, to just stand and you be bound, or for you to be on top. So it's not his weight on you when you're tied to the bed, but he's laying on the bed and your wrists are tied in front of you in such a way where you can get out and you're in charge, that you have some control because you're sitting on his face or you're sitting on his dick and you still have freedom of movement, even if you are mostly symbolically bound. But if that doesn't work, if tying him up isn't something that you want to do, it's not something that turns him on the thought of being tied up, and if even bondage that's mostly symbolic or entirely symbolic that you can just get out of whenever you want induces this panic response, unfortunately, it might not be for you. But there's all sorts of other DS play that you can engage in, and you guys already have been engaging in other forms of DS play. Taking bondage out of the mix doesn't take dom-sub sex off the table. OMGS is a website devoted to women's sexual pleasure. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, OMGS interviewed and surveyed thousands of women about what's made their pleasure better, physical techniques, psychological techniques, ways of guiding and talking with your partners. The findings, most importantly, this is crucial, the findings are peer-reviewed and published, then brought to life in fun, honest videos with regular women sharing from their own personal experience. Sometimes when it comes to learning about sex, you know, reading a paper published in a journal, it just isn't as effective as hearing someone's story, talking with someone. And what you find at OMG, yes, are people's stories from their own personal experience, but the science is there. They have been reviewed. This stuff is peer reviewed. People's ideas about what works for them have been put to the test scientifically and found to be effective and applicable and replicable, which is really important when it comes to science, and I think really important when it comes to sex. Another great thing about OMGS, you can watch the videos on your own. You can also watch them with your partner. And if you're having a hard time initiating a conversation with your partner about your pleasure, and many women find that difficult to talk about, watching these videos with your partner can help open that door. I got an email from a woman who sat down and watched a video with her partner, and he turned to her while watching and said, "Is this true for you?" about the video they were watching about pleasure. And she said, "Yeah, it is." And that allowed them to have the conversation, really bank-shotting off the video. That can be so effective. If you're having a problem talking with your partner about sex, consider subscribing to OMG Yes and watching the videos with them. Because research has shown that whether you want to discover new ways to build on your own pleasure or pleasure yourself, or find new ways to connect sexually with a partner, OMG Yes has positive effects. IU School of Medicine researchers did a study of OMG Yes users and partners. 95% reported experiencing pleasure in a way that felt new to them physically, and 2/3 of couples had significantly higher feelings of closeness and happiness in their relationship after watching OMG Yes videos. OMG Yes, not a subscription. Each batch of content is a one-time payment, like buying a book you keep forever, and your contribution goes on to fund future pleasure research. There are dozens of videos and demonstrations in each season of OMG Yes with detailed information on techniques that you can try tonight. Learn more about the study at omgyes.com, and my listeners get a discount at omgyes.com/savage. I cannot recommend this service highly enough. Go omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 33-year-old woman living on the East Coast. I recently was confronted with a rumor about my serious boyfriend of a year. I was told he was cheating. I called him immediately and told him what was said in a non-accusatory way, and I was emotional when talking to him. He became agitated and told me that this wasn't an emergency and I shouldn't have called him at work. He then texted saying that he thought he found out who it was and that he was mad at me for accusing him. The next day we talked, and he stated that he knew I wasn't accusing and he appreciated how understanding I am, and he was upset that someone was starting a rumor about him. Later that night we talked with the girl that he was being accused of cheating with, and the conversation went from us trying to figure out why this girl was spreading a rumor back to I was accusing him. He and I spoke again that night, and he was extremely upset and disrespectful to me.
I didn't hear from him for 2 weeks. I decided to call after the 2 weeks and he did not pick up. I followed up with a text and I still have not heard from him. Just as a side note, I addressed this as a concern that someone was talking poorly about the person I truly care about and our relationship, not because I thought the rumor was true. Our relationship was going really well, and before this all started, we had hung the previous day and had made many plans for the summer. I'm not a person who trusts easily, and it is a big deal that our relationship has progressed to this point. I am shocked at how mean he was and concerned about himself rather than our relationship. I'm not a person who causes drama, and I've showed that I trust him. His reaction seems unlike the guy I've been dating this whole time and does not make sense with the situation. I guess my questions to you are, what are your opinions on this rumor, his behavior, and is he really ghosting me after a year-long serious relationship? I'm truly perplexed by his behavior and the situation.
My opinions on this rumor, his behavior, and whether he's really truly ghosting you after a year-long relationship. Well, let's take the last one first. He hasn't spoken to you for 2 weeks. You called, he didn't answer. You texted, he didn't respond. Yeah, he's absolutely really ghosting you after a year-long relationship. Whether the rumors are true or not, well, based on his actions, I would say they're likely true, but I'll never know with any certainty, and neither will you, whether they're 100% for sure absolutely true. You will never know beyond a shadow of a doubt whether he was fucking this other girl. And neither will I. I'm not omniscient. I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you what was going on with your boyfriend's dick whenever it was out of your sight. But I do know, based on his behavior, based on his reaction, that you kind of dodged a bullet here. You got out after 12 short months of a relationship with someone who wasn't the good and decent and loving person that you thought and hoped he might be at the start of the relationship. You say you're slow to trust. Okay, the takeaway from here is not never trust anyone ever again. The takeaway is trust but verify, and that sounds like what you tried to do. You trusted him, this came up, these rumors got back to you, you attempted to verify the fact that they were not true so you could continue on in this relationship. Don't exit this relationship or get chucked the fuck out of this relationship because you were dumped, he ghosted you. And never trust anyone ever again. Never make the same move. I don't want to call it a mistake. Never make the same mistake again. You have to be willing to give someone a chance. You want to watch out for red flags. You don't want to be blinded by love. You want this person, whoever you date in the future, to meet your friends. And you want to listen to your friends and family and get their opinions and try to see them for who they really are, knowing at the beginning of a relationship, everyone is giving you the best version of themselves, just like you're at the beginning of a relationship, giving that person the best version of yourself. And then you get to know them better and you can peek behind the set and you can see the seams. And someone can be not as good or decent or perfect a version of themselves as they led you to believe they were at the start of the relationship, but still be good enough. Just like you're not the perfect version of yourself either, but you're good and loving enough to be worthy of that person's trust as they are worthy of your trust. So I don't want to tell you to exit this relationship and be slower to trust than you've been in the past. You got to be willing to take a chance on people. That's why Abba sings, take a chance, take a chance, take a chance, not take a certainty, take a certainty, take a certainty, take a certainty. Because a relationship is always a risk. And if you want a risk-free life, if you never want to be betrayed, if you never want to be hurt by someone else, then be alone. But being alone comes with its own kind of pain for people who would rather be partnered. And you have to weigh the risk of someone else hurting you. And you know what? In a long-term relationship, that person's probably going to hurt you once in a while as you're going to hurt them once in a while. But you have to weigh that risk of being with someone, investing someone with your trust, and then betraying that trust once in a while, and then having to be forgiven. And that process, weigh that all against the pain of being alone. If you don't want to be alone, there's people out there who want to be alone. They're not in pain. And we shouldn't treat people who would rather be alone or are alone as if they're damaged. They're not. But for people who want to be in partnerships, who say that they're slow or reluctant to trust, well, then you're not going to be in a partnership ever again or for very long. So, yeah, this is just a long way of saying you invested your trust in someone who proved in the end to be unworthy of it. And the lesson you should take from this isn't never trust anyone ever again. You're going to have to trust someone again. And hopefully the next guy that you trust won't turn out to be a shitty guy like the last guy you trusted.
Hi, Dan. I am a cisgendered gay man from Europe. and I have pretty low refractory period, so I can ejaculate and keep going pretty much immediately for a few times. That's generally great because I can enjoy sex for longer and I don't have to hold back my orgasm, but I'm faced with a challenge here. Some of the partners that I regularly have sex with come to expect that I'll come multiple times every time, and so they hold back their own orgasms. How can I let them know in an elegant way, verbally or non-verbally, that I'm in for a shorter encounter and absolutely okay with them coming with me or soon after I come for the first time? The additional difficulty here is I'm really into asses and not that much into dicks, so much so that I have sex partners who really prefer to bottom and I don't jerk or suck them off generally. So it really comes down to this. I don't want to be a dick about it. And I must admit that I have left some sexual encounters in the past where I felt my partner loved that we kept going for a long time, but they would have preferred to come themselves had they known the timing of when things changed from hot to relaxed and just chilling.
This is just a simple case of use your words. Sounds like you have regular sex partners, guys you see again and again. And you know that after that first orgasm, you can keep going and you can come again and you can come a third time, possibly even a fourth time. I've been with somebody with no refractory period, a male with no refractory period. It's sort of a genetic superpower. Congrats, you won the dick lottery. But the orgasms become less intense over time. You're still capable of having them. They're still pleasurable. But the orgasm, the third one, isn't as heightened and intense and powerful for you as the first, and you're perfectly fine having just one. These guys that you're with are probably in awe of your superpower, and they may assume that you want to have as many orgasms as you possibly can, that you want to ride this multi-orgasmic wave as long as possible. But that's not true. It is, however, on their part, a reasonable assumption. You know, straight men who are with women who are multi-orgasmic, oftentimes their one sad, sorry male orgasm, typical sorry, sad male orgasm, for, you know, her third or fourth. So they stay engaged and interested in sex as she is climaxing again and again. And these guys, these bottoms you're with, same thing. They are delaying their orgasm because they want to still be turned on and into it after your third so that you can enjoy your third. So all you got to do is say to them, like, yeah, you know this about me. I can come again and again and again. I prefer, though, for us to come together and for you to stroke yourself while I fuck your ass and to come with me or shortly after me. Because after the second or third, yeah, I'm still hard. I'm still coming. It's still pleasurable. But it's not as intense. And I'm kind of, even though my dick's still in the game, erotically disengaging. And if you just use your words there, these guys, I promise you, will want to come when it works best for you, which is what they're doing right now. They are waiting to come until the optimal moment, they assume, for you. Disabuse them of that assumption. Correct that assumption. Use your words, and you won't have this problem. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some tweets. Gregory Davis tweets, "Hey, Dan Savage and the Savage Lovecast. The bi guy on today's episode explicitly said he was not attracted to men, but only to dick. People like him aren't bi. He is a dick fetish, at least says this bi guy." Well, there we might have to agree to disagree. Gregory, I think bi is a pretty expansive category, and I am all for more people identifying as queer rather than fewer people identifying as queer, whatever brand of queer they identify as. Juliet tweets, "Can't think of a better way to start my birthday than a quickie and then listening to at Fake Dan Savage's Magnum Savage Lovecast on my commute." Thank you so much, Juliet. Thank you for being a subscriber to the Magnum Savage Lovecast. And finally, Alicia Spear tweets, "Is it just me or is that Fake Dan Savage kind of gentle and metered on episode 664. I keep expecting Dan to rip someone a new one about accidentally outing their nephew or having anti-queer cartoons in their past. Kind of nice to see your maternal side, Dan." What the fuck, Alicia? I feel like I have to blow up at you and be a big asshole to, you know, put my thumb on the scales. You used metered when you meant measured, and oh my God, how dumb is that? Actually, thank you very much for your tweet. I do have a maternal side. I think we all have a maternal side. Sometimes I let my maternal side come out to play on the Savage Lovecast. All right, and now your response calls.
Hey, Dan, this is a response to the lady who does not like it when partners try to make her come. Yeah, you're not alone. You're not alone. My reasons might be a little different. For me, it's a performance anxiety thing. It's very, very frustrating to be put on the spot and be like, you know, okay, baby, have you come yet? Are you coming? How about now? And it drives me crazy. It takes me out of the moment. I get angry, and then I just want it to be over. Totally different reasons, but still, there's just something about another person saying, I've decided you're going to do this, so do this now. It's not fun in that context. So you're not alone. It's okay if you just want to do it yourself later, or if you want to do it yourself at any point. And if your partners aren't cool with that, yeah, Dan's right. They're just not the partners for you.
Hey, this is in response to the woman who outed her nephew to his grandfather. Do not feel bad at all. This is what aunts are for. You don't want to have to sit down and come out and have a real big heart-to-heart to every member of your family and look your grandfather in the eye and say, I like butt sex. You did the totally right thing that many gay people, including myself, appreciate. You tell a chatty aunt or make sure they know from Facebook, and then hopefully word just trickles out. If anything, you should just send him a text message. Hey, I didn't realize Grandpa didn't know that you were gay yet, just to let you know he's totally cool with it. And it's kind of a relief, because then when you want to bring someone home to meet the family, you don't have to worry about coming out and having them all judge your new partner.
Hi, I'm calling in response to the cartoonist who's suffering from guilt in episode 664. I also suffer from some of the same guilt in addition to having stuff written on the internet that I'm not proud of. However, that was 10 years ago, and I'm proud to say that I have changed a lot in that time frame. And I realized fairly recently that that change is hope for me and motivation for me to look around and know that there are people listening, because I was listening 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and here I am today. I used to have a t-shirt that said, friends don't let friends vote Democrat. And now I go to protests just to talk about that change, because people are listening and it gives them hope, and we were them and now we're us.
All right, we're going to leave it there. If you like my political blathering on this show, you should hear me go off on Blabbermouth, the Stranger's Week in Review podcast, out every Wednesday, hosted by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Eli Sanders. If you are not yet a Magnum Savage Lovecast subscriber, become one today. Just go to savagelovecast.com and subscribe for 1 month or 6 months or a year. You'll get more guests, more Q&As, no ads. Just imagine. And you can also give the Magnum as a sneaky, nasty, occasionally passive-aggressive little gift or a genuine, honest, maternal gift at savagelovecast.com. The deadline is right around the corner to submit your film for my Dirty Little Film Festival Hump. You have a chance to win part of $20,000 in cash prizes. Your films can be hardcore, softcore, live action, animated, kinky, vanilla, gay, lesbian, trans, straight. All sexual orientations and gender expressions are welcome at Hump. The deadline to submit your film is September 13th. Go to humpfilmfest.com to find out more. All right, 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. A big thank you to Kara Dunkley. Check out her paper in the Journal of Sex Research. It's called Pain as Pleasure, a Theoretical Perspective. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week, another installment of Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.